we're coming back to our top story. This is what you've wanted to talk about big time, the Supreme Court finding that the Prime Minister Boris Johnson acted unlawfully when he prorogued Parliament. Proroguing Parliament was something, of course, that the DUP supported at the time. The Brexiteer DUP, quite a few of them are, of course, Jim Wells. Do you regret now supporting the prorogation of Parliament, Jim Wells, given what the Supreme Court has now said?
Well, Stephen, first of all, you need to distinguish between the civil law and the criminal law. There's not a crime here as such. There's no punishment. There's no imprisonment or anything like that. It's a civil decision. Secondly, it was a civil decision taken on the back of advice given from the Attorney General, which indicated this was acceptable. And thirdly, remember, John Major did exactly the same way back in the 1980s, and there was no issue at all. So there's a lot of strong ground for believing that prorogation was indeed entirely legal. Now, the 11 appeal court judges, the Supreme Court judges, have taken a different decision. I don't agree with that decision, but I have to accept it. And I think that's what Arling has said yesterday, that we do accept this decision and we move forward on the basis that they have a right to make this decision.
So it then speaks to the judgment of your party, doesn't it? That you have a unanimous decision by 11 senior judges that this was unlawful. And yet the judgment within the DUP at the time, before this ruling, was that this was the right thing to do.
Well, if the Attorney General had confirmed it was the right thing to do, and he is the government's law advisor and is paid to take on that role, and if it had happened when the DUP were at Westminster during the John Major era, well, then I would have thought there was very strong grounds for believing it was the correct decision. Now, unfortunately, the law lords have decided to get themselves involved, or the Supreme Court involved in effectively the executive role, making legislation, which I think opens a complete can of worms, because if they decide that they're going to get themselves involved in that activity, then I think we've got big problems ahead. And this is a quite a major constitutional change for them to get themselves involved in a decision which normally would be the main bailiwick of either the executive or parliament.
The leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, Robin Swan, has said this calls the DUP's judgment into serious question.
No, I think at the time the decision was made, I think the party, Arling and the party, and Nigel, of course, is the leader at Westminster, would have had very strong grounds for believing that this decision was one that was within the law. Now, obviously, the situation has moved on, and Arling, within minutes of the decision being made, was straight out to say, we respect the view of the Supreme Court, and it should be abided by. Things do change. Now, I'm genuinely surprised we're in this position. I think it makes it even more difficult to see where we go in the future, because now the courts are involved, as well as the executive. And meanwhile, of course, the 17.4 million people who voted to leave, their views, their will has not as yet been implemented.
Jim, can I cut to the chase here this morning? There's a lot of pressure, and we will see in Parliament today, I think Parliament's sitting at 11:30 today, we will see the Prime Minister come under pressure to, and others from within the government, coming under pressure to reveal what the alternative proposals are to the backstop. Does the DUP have any considered position, since it is still advocating Brexit, and you're an MLA from within that party? Does the DUP have any position on what the alternative to the backstop is or should be?
Stephen, there's been a whole series of discussions in recent weeks on this issue. But can I tell you the last place that those which should be broadcast is on the what you call the biggest show in the country? Because, you know, you cannot have negotiations and discussions on a very sensitive and difficult issue and then expose them on your programme where, of course, there's going to be 160,000 people paw all over them and criticise and pick holes in them.
Where are you getting those figures from? Where are you getting the Nolan Show listening figures from?
Well, I think you broadcast a few weeks ago. You were polishing your halo and saying you had 160,000 listeners. And
I don't think I did say that, did I?
Well, I mean, maybe I did.
I don't know.
Well, given it wouldn't surprise me in the least you have, because I know when I appear on your show, the reaction would indicate that most of them then come onto Facebook and social media and criticise me for what I've said on your show. So you do accept you have a very high listenership, the highest of any local radio station in the United Kingdom.
Huge.
But I mean, the point is
huge.
The point I'm trying to make, Stephen, is because you have such a high listenership, does not mean you have any divine right for sensitive negotiations to be revealed on your programme. I'm sorry, but you know, even if you're at the biggest show in the country, you don't have that right. So therefore, I know your next stage, well, why is it not revealed? It's not revealed because there's discussions ongoing between the parties. Hopefully they'll reach a resolution. Hopefully we'll get agreement of a way of getting around this very difficult issue. And you see, the DUP can't win.
But you see, at what point do we see the DUP's proposals for what it would be? And why can't the public see what the DUP's alternative to the backstop is if the DUP is saying, Jim, that they don't think that a no-deal Brexit is their favourite outcome either, then what is their alternative? Why can't we know?
Well, I think, Stephen, it's not a question of why can't the electorate know, it's why can't Stephen Nolan know. Let's be honest about it. You're bursting a blood vessel there to get your hands on whatever negotiations are ongoing, and that's not the way you deal with very sensitive and difficult issues such as this. When there's, and if agreement is reached, then of course it'll be in the public domain and the electorate will have a chance to look at it. But of course, Stephen, that's predicated on the view that a reasonable deal will then be accepted by the European Union. And they could may well turn around and say, sorry, it's a backstop or nothing, we're going nowhere. So where do we go from then? Stephen, this is the most complicated part of our constitutional history since the Second World War. I'm not going to make any further predictions, because each time I do, the following day, they're totally undermined by developments. This is complex, it's difficult, it's murky. And no one knows exactly where we're going, but certainly it's not helpful that if there's any form of discussions ongoing, that they're broadcast on the Nolan Show.
Julian O'Neill, our Home Affairs correspondent, has just tweeted the following. I understand the PSNI has this morning informed all officers of leave restrictions in October, November as part of Brexit preparations.
Well, again, Stephen, as I predicted on your TV show the other night, we will have a whole plethora of these warnings as Project Fear goes on into total.
That's the PSNI now calling its officers, restricting the amount of leave its officers can have in preparation of an October, November Brexit.
Yes, and
so the PSNI against the people now, or actually have they got their finger on the pulse that the consequences of whatever type of Brexit there may have security implications for Northern Ireland?
I have no doubt that's a caution, but a caution I suspect will be totally unwarranted. The reality is that, sadly, it's not looking like at the moment we're going to be leaving Europe on the 31st of October. I say that in angst rather than hope. I mean, it's a very sad situation we're in. The will of these 17.4 million people has been thwarted by a guerrilla warfare by those who simply cannot accept the will of the people. And they've tried the courts, they've tried Project Fear, they've tried Parliament. And, they're trying to eat away at the democratic will, the biggest vote ever in the history of the United Kingdom, and they simply can't accept it, and they're using every method they can to stop us leaving Europe, and we should have gone by now. We should have been out on the 31st of March. And all these tactics are being used, and I have no doubt that between now and the 31st of October, you and I will be discussing a whole plethora of warnings of dire consequences should the people of the United Kingdom exercise their democratic right and leave.
By the way, can I just ask a question? It's a genuine question because I don't know the answer to this. I referred to you as a member of the DUP earlier. If you've had the whip removed, are you still a member of the DUP? How does that work?
I'm glad you've asked that question because I do want to clarify it. I am still the official Democratic Unionist Party MLA for South Down. I'm still involved in the local South Down Association, and indeed I'm an officer of that association. So therefore, I'm still official DUP. I have lost the whip, so therefore I can't attend DUP Assembly Group meetings at Stormont. And if the Assembly returned, I would not be under the control of the whip at Stormont.
You'd have to sit as an independent if the Assembly...
No, but Stephen, it's the whip has been removed from Stormont, but there is no Stormont. So therefore, effectively, the whip's been removed from me from an organisation that doesn't actually at the minute meet or have any function. So therefore, no, I'm still very much a DUP member. I still attend events all
the time. And why did they remove the whip again? I can't remember.
Oh, Stephen, you're going way back here, 16 or 17 months. Well, simply because I appeared on your programme and stated that a commitment had been given to me when I resigned as health minister that I returned, and that commitment was torn up. Now, the whip was removed from me because I said that. It's as simple as that. Because I had gone public and revealed that to the public.
And do you hold out any hope? And by the way, the DUP and the people in charge of the DUP at the time would have a different version of events and would say that they did not make that commitment to you. Do you hold out any hope that you can get back inside the tent of the DUP, that Arlene Foster and others will bring you and embrace you and love you once again?
Stephen, I think under the present leadership, probably no. But I do retain a very good relationship with the party generally at local level.
So is there a complete fallout with Arlene Foster?
There's been no contact at all now for 17 months.
Can you appeal the whip being removed?
I've written and I've asked on many occasions for meetings to discuss this issue, but that, as it's revealed in the Belfast Telegraph 2 weeks ago, that hasn't happened. I mean, I've made 15 attempts to have a meeting to discuss this, and the response has been that they're too busy, and I have to agree with them. They have been incredibly busy, but I do think that I deserve half an hour of their time. That hasn't happened, and I accept that it's highly unlikely that under the present leadership I will ever return to have the whip at Stormont. But to some extent, Stephen, that's academic, because Stormont has been suspended now for 30 months. And, you know, so in all effect, I am a DUP representative. Yes, very much so. And do, by the way, Stephen, support overwhelmingly the DUP stance on things like Brexit, Irish language, economic development. In the vast majority of issues, I'm 100% behind the party. It's just this personal difficulty I've had with the party. Nothing, no policy differences whatsoever on the major policies.
And where are all your colleagues? Why aren't they rallying around you? Why aren't they fighting for you?
I think it wouldn't help your political career if you rallied around to support Jim Wells. I think that would be the kiss of death. I mean, can I say I've got good personal relationships with the vast majority of the backbenchers. I mean, and that has been maintained. But I think, you know, a party has to have discipline, and they're hardly going to rally around and say that they support me, because that would be very damaging to your long-term prospects. I understand that. But personally, I'm getting an awful lot of very good support from every level of the party. And I'm not bitter, Stephen. I'm not going off in a sulk. I've continued in my role as an MLA in South Down, and I am very confident I have retained the support of a large proportion of the 8,000 people who voted for me nearly 2 years ago, over 2 years ago.
You've probably been on the media more since you had the whip removed than before.
Yes, it's been a very fruitful time of my life, Stephen, because I have been free to express my views, particularly on Brexit, which, of course, I totally support the party on, and also issues like the protection of the unborn child and traditional marriage. I've had many to mauling from yourself and many others, and Piers Morgan, on these issues. But it hasn't given me...
Piers Morgan gave you a good saying too, didn't he?
He was absolutely wild. I mean, I've never... I mean, you're a pussycat in comparison, Stephen. I mean, there must have been...
I don't think that's a compliment.
They must have been feeding that guy raw steaks the morning that the morning they interviewed me. I have complained, of course, because I think even you would accept he went completely over the top on how he dealt with that.
I would not express an opinion.
You wouldn't. You would have at least given equal time to both people on the panel. So it has been a very, very interesting time for me personally. I've done a lot of, met a lot of people, been done a lot of interviews that wouldn't have been possible had I simply been allocated a small amount of time by the party press office. So I don't regret it. It's been very interesting. It may eventually come to an end one way or the other, and certainly, but whilst it's ongoing, I have very definite views on things like the protection of the unborn child, and I am not be stopped from expressing those, particularly in the terribly difficult situation we're in now, with the 21st of October looming fast.
Okay.
And us falling over a moral precipice.
Jim Wells, thank you very much indeed.